on January 26, 1982, working on National Council of Jewish Women Oral History, Part 2.
This is my voice level, Leonard Winograd, 1322 Lincoln Way, McKeesport. This is my voice level, Leonard Winograd, 1322 Lincoln Way, McKeesport.
Rabbi Winograd, as Eileen explained to you, we're wanting to talk with you about your family history, your life experiences, and some of the ways in which you are part of the McKeesport and Greater Pittsburgh life. First of all, do you want to tell us, please, about your immediate family, your parents, your siblings?
What do you want to know about them?
Well, first of all, who they were and something about them. I mean, their names, that kind of thing.
Yeah, my parents were both immigrants from really different backgrounds, from the kind of backgrounds where they almost did not speak in Europe. So that you could technically say that they were both Litvaks, but Litvak is a very big word. Litvak is as big a word in itself as Sephardi is, if you understand that a Sephardic Jew can be a Western Jew from Amsterdam or can be an Oriental Jew from Turkey. These are very big terms. On my mother's side of the family, they were Lubavitchers. They came from a village, Shadrin, which had been founded in the 1840s in Russia, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe bought this land with money that he got from a wealthy lumberman, bought the land from the Tsar, and the people who lived in that came there, literally got 40 acres and a mule, and they came there pretty much to be almost like cultic Jews. So that when we see our children these days who become enamored of a guru and go out to Vancouver to live with him, my great-great-great-grandfather was that kind of a child. At the age of 16, he left Sevastopol hitchhiking on wagons to go some 600 miles to Shadrin, where there was a rabbi that he wanted to study with. Left his family and never returned.
About what year was this?
Well, that would have been around 1860. Mm-hmm. And the more people change, the more they stay the same. And they came into Shadrin, and my mother was born there on a bed of straw. They came to America. She came with her father, who had at least asthma, maybe something worse, and a wife and a lot of little children, and they kept cattle in a shed attached to the house, and they were dairy farmers on the Hill District of Pittsburgh. Before my mother went to school in the morning, she had to deliver milk all over the Hill District. When she got out of school, she had to graze the cattle in the Solo Dump. And then when she was almost of junior high age, she was old enough to quit school and go to work full time because the family needed money. So we're very pious people. They didn't whistle because that invited the devil. And of course they didn't... if you went to work on the Sabbath, as one of the children did, then my mother's father said Kaddishmore.
What was that family name, Randy?
Horvitz, H-O-R-V-I-T-Z. Well, my father's family, they were also Litvaks from that area of Russia, which was Poland between World War I and World War II. So when mother got mad at daddy, she called him a Polak, which was not really a term of endearment. And Daddy came, although he grew up in a Misnagdisha family, meaning these were people who were the opponents of the Hasidim and the kind of people who I suppose had parties when the Baal Shem Tov died. Even though he grew up in that kind of very pious family, he, his brothers and sisters were all radicals. He came to America at the age of either 17 or 19. He wasn't sure himself.
And about what year would that have been?
Around the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. And he came with an older brother and sister. They already had a half-brother living in Pittsburgh, so they came to Pittsburgh. That half-brother stayed there maybe 10 years or so and went on to Chicago. So that in Chicago, there's a large Winograd family club, and these are all people somehow related to my uncle Philip, okay, who died many years ago. My mother and my father, I don't know exactly how they met, but they were in the spirit of those times. They were both young radicals. Daddy more radical and magical in a different way than Mama. Because Mama was a baby when she came. She was like 2 years of age.
About what time did her family come, and what brought them to Pittsburgh?
They came because of the Kishinev pogrom, because of the fear generated by the Kishinev pogrom. Okay? Kishinev pogrom, we're talking 1903. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, the household in which I grew up, well, the only time that Daddy ever made real money was when he was a huckster in the fruit business in Pittsburgh. I was born in Pittsburgh, and Daddy early went into the very glamorous motion picture business and really never made money again. We had beautiful buildings. In fact, I think it tells something about my father that when he built the Oriental Theater in Rochester, he built it to be the most beautiful movie theater in the world. And if I show you pictures of it, you would tell me that you've never seen anything more beautiful. And I have the pictures here, too. And I have all kinds of things in my house. It's a part of our personal pride and family self-esteem that other people wouldn't understand because they probably never had anything quite like it. And I was just born into it like a little prince. But out in my study, I have a big Buddha from the Oriental Theater. And I have the chair that was my office chair. And every chair in every seat in that theater was made to an architect's drawing. The carpeting was to an architect's drawing. And the ceiling was a sky with the twinkling stars in the constellations and a moon that traveled around the sky and clouds that traveled around. It was the first building that anyone had ever heard of that was built for air conditioning, long before we could afford to have the air conditioning. And what happened was that the restroom lounge chairs were imported from Italy, Italian walnut. Then the Depression hit just as we opened the theater, and our family was rescued financially by a very religious Protestant man, a contractor named Fred Cook. And I don't want to go too far into this except to say that in his own way he was probably a saint. That when my father went to him, he had told my mother that this was the only hope he had left, that this didn't work, she would find him in the Ohio River. That's hard to say. Anyhow, I had an older sister and a younger brother.
Do you want to give us their names also, please?
Yeah, my sister, S-E-L-M-A, Selma. She's Mrs. Reuben Cohen. She lives in Pittsburgh, of course, Winograd. And my brother is Kenneth Winograd, and he lives in Pittsburgh. In Mount Washington, Grandview Avenue. And I didn't realize when we were growing up that we were a highly moralistic family. I thought everybody was like that. But both of my parents were extremely moralistic people. And the children were, and there were two factors involved in this. One factor was that they were young idealistic radicals and saw things in black and white and good and evil terms. I never once in our home heard anybody being discussed as a person. Gossiping never entered our house. And at our table there was always enough to talk about with Father Coughlin and with politics and with Hitler.
When you say your parents were radicals, are you saying political radicals?
I'm saying that, yeah. always at least socialist, and father was very sympathetic to the Russian Revolution. Every Sunday, until Sunday movies came into Rochester after World War II, every Sunday, the kids came home from religious school in Beaver Falls. We live now in Rochester, Pennsylvania, 25 miles north of Pittsburgh. Kids came home from religious school. We had a fantastic lunch that Mother made for us. Potato latkes and fried eggs and fried salami. And then we got in the car and we went to Pittsburgh to my father's sister, who was married to a man named Samuel Miller, who was had been a teacher in Russia and had to leave Russia because he signed diplomas in excess of the Jewish quota, if you know what that means. The people he gave diplomas to were qualified for diplomas, but except that they were Jews. And Uncle Shmeli and my Aunt Fagel have still a daughter in Pittsburgh, Sarah, who was their only child. They have a granddaughter in Pittsburgh, and you probably know Sheila Shannon. That's a granddaughter. She's a cousin. So we would go there every single Sunday and stay in that house the whole day. And the whole day, it was what we would call today, to use a nice term, left-wing politics. Okay? They were normal American immigrant Jews from Russia, and they were left, and they were radical. At the same time, Mother had very deep, strong religious feelings, and my father did not, except that he had a kind of respect for rabbis and a respect for religion that I never heard from any other Jew in my acquaintance up until that time. So that although Daddy never went to services and Daddy never came to the synagogue, except for I can tell you the occasions when my father went in the synagogue. My bar mitzvah, and my brother's bar mitzvah, and Ann Siegel's wedding, because her father was his best friend, and the day they got word that I was alive in Europe after I'd been missing. Then Mr. Kaplan came to the house and said, "Mr. Winograd, you should go to shul." And so my daddy went.
He didn't object.
This was an Orthodox synagogue. It was about a block from our house. And it was a small community, so that soaking wet, 25 families, so that if I didn't go to services, they wouldn't have a minyan. And this was unthinkable, so I always went to services all those years. But what was different in my case was that I was at work, being in the movie business, and I would have to leave work to go to the synagogue, whereas with other people, it was kind of a leisure time activity on Friday evening. Anyhow, one big factor in the fact that we are highly principled people, and we know it, and that this does distinguish us from other people, and we're all aware of this, my sister and my brother and I. We weren't when we were growing up. One was the kind of parents that we had. Then there was another factor which I have noticed. Children raised in motion picture families in this era. You see, growing up in the Depression, if your daddy was in the movie business, you could see the movies for nothing, of course. But the movies then were all morality plays, so that every motion picture had to end with good people winning and with bad people losing. It was unthinkable that things would come out the other way around. So that even if in real life they come out the other way around, it really is not supposed to be that way. That's wrong. And it happens, but it's not right that it happens. I have noticed with many of the people I have known through the years now as adults who were little kids whose fathers were motion picture exhibitors, that they are extremely moralistic people. And just in the same way that dentists are very sensitive people, because because they can't make a living unless they're sensitive to other people. They have to be able to look at someone's face and see pain instantly before the person themselves knows that they're in pain. In that way, in the motion picture business, something that comes with doing that kind of work is this moralistic approach to life and this emphasis upon principle as being above anything else. My brother never married, for which I sometimes hate him, but I think that...
You want to explain that?
Yes, I think that he should have married same as I did. It's something you're supposed to do, you know? And I have 4 sons, and they are, to a very great extent, seriously the meaning of my life. And I don't hate him for not marrying. I just mean that sometimes I'm very jealous when he's in this beautiful bachelor pad on Mount Washington, looking out over the whole world as though he were not even part of it, you know. And gives my mother a hard time because she really believes that just like she got married and paid her dues, he should too. But anyhow, my sister has 2 sons. One is the New England director for the Weizmann Institute, working out of Boston. He worked for many years for Israel Horns. His name is Harvey Cohen. The other son is in Washington about to enter law school. His name is Mark Cohen. I have 4 sons. You want to know on this where they are?
Well, sure. I don't think
the
order matters.
You care for that?
Yeah, yeah. We were going to want it eventually, so let's do them now.
All right.
That's
fine. The oldest boy, Emil, is named for my father. He lives in Chicago, and he is a recreation therapist. A few months ago, he got a national award for operating the finest recreation facility for handicapped people in the country. They had some 6,000 clients last year. He's the executive director.
He worked for an agency?
He works for an agency in Chicago which provides recreation for physically handicapped, mentally retarded, and emotionally disturbed children and adults. And it's like a little college. And so he is working on his 2nd master's. His wife is to graduate from medical school in June. They met when they were both counselors at Camp Harlem, and that was many years ago, and since then they haven't known that anybody else existed, including me. My 2nd son is Harry. He's not married, and he's in his 2nd year of law school at Emory University, and he just got an award yesterday that is given by this publishing company, the top student in the class each semester, and he got that particular award, which is worth a toll call from Atlanta, Georgia.
I would think so.
Okay, 3 is Michael, and he is a graduate student at Pitt in the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs. He's 24. And the baby is Ethan, who is 14. And is in the 9th grade, and would prefer to be 7 foot tall because the only thing he really wants to do is to be a professional basketball player and sign autographs.
Did we get the ages of the older 2 boys?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Emma will be 29 on February the 12th. And Harry is 26, and Michael is 24.
Okay. I'd like to backtrack a little bit,
dear,
to your home. When Father did not go to synagogue, and Mother was obviously very pious.
Yeah. I want to know how pious.
Did you handle this in terms, you said you always were willing to go and make the minyan.
Well, I want you to know how pious. This was an Orthodox shul. On holidays such as Shavuot and Sukkot and even Pesach, when there would be a bare 10 men come in early in the morning, my mother came also. She was the woman who came.
Even though she could not be counted.
She couldn't be counted in the Minyan, and she couldn't read Hebrew. She read the English, okay? Because the way they raised these girls in this Lubavitcher family, they taught them practically nothing about their religion. Mother learned the blessing over Shabbos candles when a Reform woman from Pittsburgh came to Beaver Falls to teach the young women there how to light candles. Because she was
under
a younger...
Under whose auspices was
that
this?
That would probably counsel a Jewish woman.
Yes, they ran the Southwest District Sunday School.
It was Southwest District. That's where I was confirmed. I was confirmed in Beaver Falls as part of the Southwest District. And if you would say the lady's name, I would say that's the one, okay? But I don't remember her. How did it affect me?
Well, you and your siblings, you obviously stayed closer to your mother's line of thinking in terms of your synagogue attendance.
You know, I had my world, my mother had her world, my father had his. And my father was such a high-class person. If he didn't want to go to synagogue, that was all right with me.
You didn't challenge this or wonder why should you go when he didn't?
And if kids ever said anything to me about it, I don't remember that they did. If they did, it would have just washed off me like constructive criticism. I wouldn't have heard it. Okay? I have to finish a thought that I started about Daddy. I remember sitting at the table with some of my Orthodox cousins one night when they had their Orthodox rabbi, whom they thought was really great. They described another Orthodox rabbi in very unkind terms, to the degree of saying, "He stinks." And my father said, "Rabbis do not stink. If you knew anything about Yiddishkeit, you would know that rabbis do not stink." Now, my father only spoke to me about the Torah a couple of times, but you see, you can catch what a person feels from the way they talk about something. And what he taught me about Torah was that you can't take any particular line and live by it. You read the entire thing from beginning to end, and it changes you, and you become a different kind of person. But you don't pick out this sentence or that sentence and tell somebody that they should do this or that because of this or that sentence. I got a respect for Torah from my father that I never got from any of the so-called religious Jewish people in the community. Okay.
What was your relationship in this? I assume it was a small community where there were few Jews living.
Right.
What was it like growing up in that kind of community as a Jew? What did you feel about that?
Yeah.
What were your relationships with others there?
Well, the handful of Jewish children in the Tree of Life Synagogue in Rochester were more like cousins than like friends.
How old were you when you moved to Rochester?
Two.
Oh, so you really don't remember life in Pittsburgh.
I really don't. The first picture of me in this world is, they tell me, sitting on the lap of a man who became a rabbi, Milton Graflin, who was our next door neighbor, okay? So.
She called destiny.
And, well, his father was Cousin Grafman. And, anyhow, I grew up in a school system where religion was a very integral part of the school system. Do you want me to take this phone?
Okay.
The most important people in the town that I grew up in were the ministers and the priests. They were everywhere. There were 17 churches in a town of 7,000 people. That meant a church on every single corner. Never more than one church on one corner, but sometimes at an intersection you could have four churches. And every day at high school, as I remember, it began with one of those clergymen coming in and leading a prayer or doing some kind of assembly program, telling us a story, something like that.
How did it feel to be Jewish in this?
I believe very strongly in religion in the public schools because I had this experience. This is not a superficial thing. I learned to pray from those people. I knew that Jews don't believe in Jesus. I didn't have to have anybody tell me that. That's what you have parents for. I knew that Jews don't believe in Jesus, and I didn't pray to Jesus. But I learned watching those men what it is a person does when they pray. I feel very sorry for people who tell me that they can't pray. You have to be exposed to it. They say religion is not something that's taught, it's something that's caught. And from somewhere in that place, from one of those old guys or one of those young ones, I caught it, okay? I also feel that it's very good for preparation to be a Jew in the diaspora, to be exposed to this kind of a religious experience. Obviously, it's an experience that is in some respects alien to you. You have to know that most of the people around whom you live have religious practices that are not yours. As a matter of fact, because the way you were raised, they say things that sound ridiculous to you. And you don't have to insult them for it. And you can live without being offended. I feel very sorry for those Jews whose egos are so weak that they turn red when they are at a public meeting and someone mentions Jesus. Everyone knows that Christians believe in Jesus, and the Jews don't, so what's the big deal? I mean, is this like you're reminding an unwed mother that she's not married? I mean, there's no disgrace involved, there's no shame involved, and you ought to be able to live that way if you're going to live in a mixed society. I believe that the thing is so important to so many Christian people and so insignificant to Jews that to offend them over a thing like this is stupid. However, we do have a lot of stupid leadership in Jewish life.
In any life, I think.
Right.
All right.